Okay, so this morning I'm going to present to you, this is part of my dissertation research, looking at on-road bike facilities and bike crashes in Iowa. And I do not have any financial relationships to disclose. Okay. Just starting with a little background, both ridership and bicycle infrastructure has been increasing in the United States. And this is partially due to a push to have more complete streets that incorporate all different modes of transportation, including pedestrians and bicyclists. We currently have an estimated 1.8 miles of bicycle facilities per square mile in the United States, and that's a 29% increase in the last 2 years between 2010 and 2012. But despite all this, there's still little evidence regarding how the protective nature of on-road bike infrastructure in the U.S. And this is especially true for smaller towns and cities, because most of the research out there that's been done is in big cities like Portland or New York City. So the aims of this study were to identify the impact of on-road bike facilities on bike crashes in Iowa, and then compare the impact between the different facility types. And when I say bike facilities, this is what I'm talking about. For this study, bicycle-specific signage, which are the share the road signs, or where it's just the bike sign part up there, not the wording on the bottom. Bicycle lanes and shared lane arrows, also known as sharrows. Oh, and I should mention all the photos in the study or in the presentation are from the study. So these are all pictures of things in Iowa. Okay. So my methods, this is a matched case control study. I used the Iowa Department of Transportation crash database years 2007 to 2010, and I selected 147 crash sites and then matched one-to-one with 147 control sites matched on roadway classification, so things like interstate, arterial, collector, and then neighborhood, which was census block group. And I only looked at intersection crashes. And I included four counties, Blackhawk, Lynn, Scott, and Johnson, and sorry, the map's a little cut off, but this is a map of Iowa. The yellow highlighted areas are the four counties that I selected. And that was mostly due to feasibility, but also those are the some of the top areas in number of frequency of bicycle crashes. So why did I choose the study design? Well, I had crash data from the DOT data set, but I wanted to be able to adjust for motor vehicle and bicycle volume, so I needed to get counts of those, so I used current traffic counts. So this is in the bicycle literature, this is a fairly novel method. I based my study design off of a similar study by Kepsel et al. 2002, which was pedestrian motor vehicle collisions in Washington and California. And then a more recent study, 2011, Sheppers et al. Looked at bicycle motor vehicle crashes, but this was in the Netherlands, and they used a little bit different way of doing traffic counts. I'll go into my exact way I did it, but they looked at only off-peak hours, not necessarily the exact time and day that the crash occurred. And they also looked at more specific things like colors of the bike lane. Like sometimes in Europe they paint a bike lane red, and they wanted to know if that is different from when it's not painted. And also the case control design was useful because bicycle crashes are a fairly rare outcome. I like to think about what if you're sitting at an intersection just waiting for a crash to happen. Probably not a very efficient study design. And it's less expensive and more efficient regarding time. And then there's also, in the injury prevention field, we know that making adjustments to the environment can be a great way to have an impact, because it's a more passive way. You don't have to think about if you tried to get everyone to wear a helmet. It's probably a lot harder than painting a bike lane on the road they travel down. They're probably more likely to use that. Okay, so before I get into the exact data I collected, I wanted to give you a little taste of what it's like out in the field collecting traffic counts. So I have a short video clip I want to show you. And notice the time of day.
quickly.
Can you hear this? Okay, hold on. We tried it out. Just a minute. We tested it out ahead of time and it worked, but apparently the volume has been turned down. Can it be turned up in the back there? Oh, that's turned up all the way. Is there a volume control back there? And that little thing. Sorry. I did test this ahead of time. Yeah. Okay. Oh yeah, I think this will work. Okay. There you Okay, so that gives, sorry about the quality of that, but it gives you a little taste of what it was like being out in the field. So what I actually did was 30-minute observation period. So I found out the exact time of the crash. So let's say the crash was at noon. Then I would collect data from 11:45 to 12:15. So the crash time would be right in the middle. And I went out the same time of day and the same day of week as the index crash, and I measured the casing control intersections at the same time. So every time I went out to collect data, I would go and I'd have to bring someone along with me, which sometimes was my mom. She's great. So I collected bicycle motor vehicle counts and environmental features. The picture up here, I know you can't read it, but this is the data collection sheet we use, and I included like photos of what the facilities were just to make sure people were coding things the right way. And I collected data from July through October of 2011. I videotaped the 30-minute observation periods, as you could see, and I did still photographs and sketched the intersection configuration. Okay, so the analysis, we looked at frequencies and means, and also did a conditional logistic regression to look at predictors of whether it was a case or control site, and conditional because of the match data. So here's what I found. This is just the distribution of the facility types. As you can see, most of the intersections did not have a bike facility, but we had the control intersections, 15% of them had at least one facility versus 11.6 of the case sites. So you saw a little bit more facility presence at the control sites. And then you also saw more bicycle lanes and multiple facilities. So that would be where there's a bike lane and a shared share the road sign, for example. At the control sites, they had slightly more. And I should also point out, we just had a really low number of shared lane arrows overall. So in the regression, we had to combine bike lanes and shared lane arrows together into a category called pavement markings, unfortunately. I really wanted to look at them separately, but we just didn't have the numbers. Okay, so width and speed limit. First, I should define what index and non-index street is. So index street is the street the motor vehicle was traveling on when the crash occurred, and non-index street is the street the motor vehicle is not traveling on. We did not have the detailed information on which street the bicycle was traveling on. So curb-to-curb width of the index street, so the street the motor vehicle was on, for case sites was... The average was 48 feet, but for control sites it was narrower, 43.4. And then speed limit for both index and non-index streets were really similar, an average of 28 miles per hour. So most places really was 25 miles per hour. And then we looked at sidewalks. We categorized these into full, partial, or none. So partial would mean there might be sidewalks on one side of the street, but not the other. And full, as you would think, sidewalks on all sides. So we found that control sites had more partial or no sidewalks, and the case sites where the crashes happened had more full sidewalks. And then traffic controls, so we just categorized this as yes or no. So yes means there was a traffic light or a stop sign or a yield sign, any kind of traffic control present. And we found that crash sites, the case sites, had more traffic controls present than the control sites. And then looking at the counts of bicycles and motor vehicles, we found higher number of motor vehicles at the crash sites compared to controls, and the bicycle numbers were really similar, but just slightly more bicycles present at the case sites. So then our logistic regression, we did two different models. The first one was looking at any facility present versus no facility. And unfortunately, we didn't have statistical significance, but our results suggest that having a bike facility present can reduce the odds of a crash by as much as 52%, with the odds ratio of 0.48. And the only other variable in the model that the only variable in the model that remained significant was curb-to-curb width. So you see that for every 10 feet increase in the width of the index street, the odds of it being a crash site increased by 1.4. And I think this kind of makes sense if you think about especially crashes where the motor vehicle's on one road and the biker's crossing over. If the street the motor vehicle's on is wider, when the bike is crossing, they're exposed to the traffic longer. So I thought that finding made sense. And then we looked by facility type. So we wanted to know are pavement markings better than the signs, or are they the same, or what? So we had three categories. We looked at pavement markings, so that was bike lanes or shared lane arrows, bike-specific signage, or the combination of those two things. And again, we didn't have statistical significance. We didn't quite have enough power. We were slightly underpowered, but we feel that the results suggest that these things are protective with the pavement markings and the combination of the two more being more protective than just the signage alone. And again, we had curb-to-curb width, so the wider the street the car is traveling on, the increased risk of crash. So just in summary, our results suggest that on-road bike facilities in Iowa are protective against crash risk, and pavement markings are more protective than signage, that the wider the roadway the motor vehicle is traveling on, the higher the crash risk, and we believe these results combined with existing literature support moving forward with infrastructure changes, but at the same time continuing to do future research that determines the best configurations of features, and even more specifically looking at, like, a lot of studies in Europe have started looking at more specific details of exactly like the color of the bike lane or the optimal width or more specific features of the facilities themselves. So I'd like to thank my data collection helpers, which included my mom and my boyfriend and a bunch of fellow students, my dissertation committee, including my mentor, Corey Piquesa, and Marizen Ramirez, they're both here, and Ginger, Ginger Young, and also that this was funded by the Injury Prevention Research Center at Iowa, partially by the Iowa DOT, and a pilot grant from the Heartland Center for Occupational Safety and Health. And that's all I have. Are there any questions?
I have a quick question. On Hurricane Michael out in Iowa, are there restrictions to people being on sidewalks?
Generally, no, but in some, like, I live in Iowa City, there in the downtown area, a lot of places, like, in the downtown most densely populated by people on the sidewalks, there's restrictions against riding on the sidewalks. But I would say majority of places, no.
Okay. My name is Logan, I'm from the region, and we have, we're experiencing the same thing that I'm sure many other metropolitan areas are, to increase cyclists. So our big focus now is education and outreach. So I'm wondering, between 2007 and 2010, where you pulled your crashes from, was there any type of element of education and outreach in regards to sharing the way with educating both users, whether it's pedestrians, cyclists, and or drivers?
Not any change in what was already happening that I'm aware of. The only thing I really know I'm aware of are just sometimes programs in schools like bike rodeos where they teach riding skills, but there, as far as I'm aware, there were no like media campaigns or anything about safe riding or any like concerted effort for public education.
Do you think there are any limitations with
I would say they're a little bit different because the four counties I included are probably some of the most progressive counties in terms of bike infrastructure. Because I selected the four counties. Well, the highest frequency of crashes is in Polk County, but that's Des Moines area, and it was not feasible for me to travel there, and I had to exclude that. But the next four highest frequencies were the ones included in the study. And I just needed the numbers because those were also the places with the most infrastructure present. So I guess the summary of that is it's only representative of the more progressive communities. But I think as other communities or counties start progressing, it should translate to that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Were you able to sort of address whether the time of the crash, there was any signage versus not.
Yes. So I didn't mention it in here, but I actually talked to the city engineers of every single city in every county that I included to find out when their bike facilities were put in. And if there was a crash, let's say, that occurred in 2009, and then in 2010 they put in Sharrows or some type of bike facility, I had to exclude that, because going out and doing traffic counts in 2011 wouldn't have been representative. So I did have to exclude not a ton, but a handful of places, because there were changes in the midst of those years. Mm-hmm. Good question. Anybody else?
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.